This is Ozarks at Large for Tuesday, July 10th, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Support for KUAF comes from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, hosting American Encounters, Thomas Cole and the Narrative Landscape through August 13th. The exhibit features six paintings of distinctive style, influences, and impact on other American artists. The exhibition is part of a multi-year collaboration with Crystal Bridges, the Louvre, and others. More information is available online at crystalbridges.org.
Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale's and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering news and stories researched, written, and edited by local journalists. More information is available online at nwaonline.com.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, we check in on the progress made by a sustainability consortium that was launched 3 years ago and is comprised of several groups, including the University of Arkansas. And the Sugar Gallery debuts its new pop-up shows in Northwest Arkansas. Plus, the latest installment of Arkansongs, Wayne Bell from the Fayetteville Flyer discusses the songs of summer and more. But first,
Ken Aden, the Democratic nominee for the Arkansas's 3rd congressional seat, is withdrawing from that race. The announcement comes after inquiries into his claims of military service. A release from the campaign says the ongoing saga related to his military record created a distraction for the campaign. The Democratic Party will not be able to field another candidate to challenge incumbent Steve Womack, a Republican. Congressman Womack was considered a heavy favorite to be reelected. Two other candidates will be on the ballot in November, Green Party nominee Rebecca Kennedy and the Libertarian Party candidate David Pengrack.
Southwest Power Pool dedicated its new $62 million headquarters yesterday in Little Rock. The nonprofit manages electric services for 65 utilities in a 9-state area. The new corporate office draws together employees that have been working in 3 locations in Little Rock and Maumelle. In an interview with Arkansas Business, President and CEO Nick Brown says the new campus will allow Southwest Power Pool to better meet its needs.
Our primary mission is to help our member utilities work together to keep the lights on today and in the future. And in living up to that responsibility requires a facility hardened like this to provide physical security, security against weather situations, and cyber security to ensure that we're able to do our job on a 24/7 basis.
The facility is also designed to improve efficiency from both technical and personnel angles.
Arkansas forestry officials say the recent bouts of rain have done little to quell wildfires in the state. Mark Coutrere is a fire management officer for the Forestry Commission. He says lightning strikes from thunderstorms have created more fires in areas that were already severely dry.
The more rain we get, the better, but the rain does dampen us because our detection flights can't get out. You know, they can't spot them when they're small. You know, they can't fly through the rain, so therefore we're relying on people to call them in, and they get a little bit bigger. So the rain's really not helped our situation any.
Coutrere says initial reports show that on Sunday there were 6 confirmed wildfires that burned 200 acres. He says it will take 3 to 5 inches of rain to get some communities out of fire danger.
The Arkansas Arts Council has revealed the recipients of the 2012 Governor's Arts Awards. Zeke Taylor from Eureka Springs has won the Lifetime Achievement Award. Other award recipients include Clayton Scott from Fayetteville and John Jetter from Fort Smith. Sponsored annually by the Arkansas Arts Council, the Governor's Arts Awards recognize individuals and corporations for their outstanding contributions to the arts in Arkansas. The recipients were nominated by the public and then selected by an independent panel of arts professionals from around the state. Each recipient will receive an original work of art created by glass artists Charles and Michael Riley of Hot Springs, owners of Riley Art Glass Studios. The awards will be presented in the fall.
A member of the University of Arkansas men's track and field team is the new Irish champion in the 3,000-meter steeplechase. David Flynn, who will be a senior at the U of A next season, won the steeplechase event at the Woody's DIY Track and Field Championships of Ireland this weekend. Flynn is a native of Dublin.
The longest losing streak in the history of the Northwest Arkansas Naturals is now 8 games long after the Nats dropped a 7-6 decision to San Antonio last night in Springdale. Northwest Arkansas hasn't won a game since July 1st. The Naturals will face the Missions again tonight at 7 at Arvest Ballpark.
Clouds should cover much of the region tonight. Lows in the mid-60s in northwest Arkansas, lower 70s for the Arkansas River Valley. There is a 20% chance of isolated showers tonight around Fort Smith. Tomorrow, 20% chance of showers or thunderstorms throughout the listening area with highs in the mid-90s. The latest forecast from the National Weather Service doesn't give much hope for an immediate respite from the dry conditions. There is no mention of even a slight chance of rain from tomorrow night through at least next Monday. This is Ozarks at Large. 3 years ago this month, Walmart, the world's largest retailer, announced plans to develop a sustainability product index to be shared openly with other retailers and manufacturers around the world. Walmart funded the launch of a sustainability consortium, bringing together research scientists from the University of Arkansas and Arizona State University with member suppliers, retailers, and NGOs to establish global scientific standards to measure the sustainability of consumer goods. It was an ambitious goal. So, how's it going? Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich has this update.
The last time we reported on the Sustainability Consortium was at a 2010 Suppliers Conference on the University of Arkansas campus, co-hosted by the Applied Sustainability Center at the Walton College of Business and the Environmental Defense Fund, a year after the Sustainability Index was launched. There, retail suppliers representing a who's who of industry, Stonyfield Farms, Electrolux, Clorox, Lipton Tea, even waste management came to better understand the business case for sustainability. Why? Because as Walmart suppliers, they are eventually expected to deploy green manufacturing and packaging practices, providing everyday low-priced inventory on demand while making a buck. Fitting those three giant puzzle pieces together has not been easy, especially in a down economy. So over the years, the Sustainability Index focus has shifted from creating standardized indexed eco-labels for consumer products more towards best global green supply chain practices. The Sustainability Consortium has pushed forward under different leadership and without Walmart at the helm. The U of A branch, which is Operations Central, has moved out of the Walton College of Business into a spacious office suite on the U of A Research and Technology Park in South Fayetteville. Mike Vaupel is Operations Director.
This is our Fayetteville office. We have a really great space. We house several full-time staff and also several incredibly productive graduate students here.
Who together are currently on task developing a standardized framework for the communication of sustainability-related information throughout the product value chain. In other words, coming up with the best way to green up consumer goods while producing less waste. Mike Vaupel said the consortium's university partnership has also expanded to include Wageningen University in the Netherlands and now counts 100 corporate members worldwide.
And also CSOs, civil society organizations. So civil society organizations include NGOs plus GOs plus government organizations. And we have relationships and membership with many NGOs and CSOs. We also have relationships with several other universities, both inside and outside of the United States.
Corporate members pay annual dues. The NGOs, including World Wildlife Fund, Natural Resources Defense Council, and Environmental Defense Fund, serve as consultants.
The NGOs are really critical in everything that we do to make sure that we have a good understanding of what the important issues in sustainability are. The science tells us a lot, but the NGO's input is really important to us.
And what are members provided exactly?
What the consortium offers is a unique methodology for reporting on the sustainability attributes of consumer goods products. This methodology is called the Sustainability Metrics and Reporting System. So it brings consistency and transparency to sustainability, both environmental and social attributes. We're creating information that retailers and also manufacturers can use and are using to develop decision-making tools regarding environmental and social sustainability impacts.
The consortium staff are 6 months into a year-long project.
We are looking at sustainability of product categories. Examples of a product category would be computers, beef, plastic toys, cotton. Those are all categories of consumer goods products that we're addressing right now. Inside of these categories, there's enough consistency to gather actionable information and make decisions regarding sustainability attributes.
And that means?
For each product category, we develop a dossier of sustainability information that has been published and that we have also gathered through expert interviews. After the dossier is developed, we create a category sustainability profile, which in our jargon is called a CSP, which is a, some people have called it a cliff notes about the science of sustainability in a category. So if the science tells us that water usage is important for that category, then water usage will be in the CSP. If the science tells us that energy usage or that toxic emissions or that worker safety is important inside of that category, then it will be in the CSP. Following the development of the CSP, key performance indicators, which we call KPIs, because we're busy people and we need to shorten things. KPIs are developed, which are a set of questions that can be used to help decision-making regarding the attributes in that category.
In building a standardized framework for global business, Sustainability Consortium staff will eventually complete sustainability profiles on the life cycles of 1,500 consumer categories under the Sustainability Measurement and Reporting System, or SMRS. The jargon is so dense, the consortium posts a glossary online for suppliers to refer.
About half the work we do is in food and agriculture products. Our other areas of emphasis are paper and forestry products, electronics products, home and personal care products, and toys. Those are our major areas of emphasis. So of the 100 categories we'll complete this year, nearly half of those are food and agriculture products. The others are spread out across the other areas of emphasis that we have.
The profiles point to a wide range of environmental impacts, including climate change, air and water quality, and human health, including social impacts such as worker safety and fair trade. And Walmart, Mike Vaupel says, continues to be the consortium's most vocal advocate.
Walmart is showing tremendous leadership in this space. There's just no doubt about that. Other retailers and other manufacturers are using and preparing to use the tools that we're developing, the SMRS tools. But Walmart has made more public announcements regarding what they're doing than anybody else, as far as we're aware.
Each year, Walmart hosts a sustainability milestone meeting last May in Bentonville to assess progress and encourage suppliers to engage. The consortium posts key video clips from such gatherings on its website. Here, Ed Kolajewski, Executive Vice President of Global Sourcing.
If you go ahead and you think about these ideas, whether it's the factory, the packaging, or whatever, and we work with organizations like the Sustainability Consortium and other great partners that we have around the world, you start leveraging this from one item to hundreds of thousands, I think the possibilities are really incredible.
And Walmart President and CEO Mike Duke.
This is gaining in importance, not losing importance. It's more important than ever that you be involved in this. So, you know, I've said this many times, so things I think are important, I repeat. This is right for our business, and it's the right thing to do.
And Sustainability Consortium Operations Director Mike Faupel says because of the social, environmental, and economic challenges we face, the need to scientifically quantify and communicate the sustainability of products is critical to making informed decisions.
This stuff matters a lot. I mean, we're in a world of resource depletion, of accelerating climate change, in increased water scarcity globally. A number of environmental and social problems need to be addressed by the retail and manufacturing industries, and that's what we're doing.
In 6 months, we'll check back to assess the outcome of the consortium's year-long project and when we can expect to purchase reasonably priced toilet tissue made from 100% recycled paper. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
To learn more, visit sustainabilityconsortium.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Sugar Gallery, an entity devoted to showcasing works of students, faculty, and visiting lecturers from the Department of Art, the Faye Jones School of Architecture, and the School of Human Environmental Sciences Interior Design Program, is in the middle of a temporary, somewhat nomadic experience. The gallery, destined to be permanently rooted in Fayetteville after some time in Bentonville, is hosting a series of one-night-only pop-up shows. The next will be July 28th and will feature recent works by Sarah Loeffler at her studio on School in Fayetteville. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Ms. Loeffler. Welcome.
Thank you.
And also Kat Wilson, a co-director of Sugar Gallery. Sarah, I want to talk to you about your art in just a moment, but first, Kat, this is sort of a new phase for Sugar, isn't it?
Yeah, it'll be about a year-long. And then we'll have a permanent home next year, undisclosed location on campus.
Undisclosed meaning some people know it's secret or?
Well, I don't know.
Oh, okay. The idea for the pop-ups is it's a one-night experience.
Right, correct. And it's you can see it as like no boundaries in a way. Like it could be anywhere. We could do it in an alleyway. We could do it in the Chamber of Commerce on a first Thursday. We could do it in an artist studio. So it's boundaryless.
This is not the first of the pop-ups.
This is the first.
This is the first mm-hmm. pop-up. Okay, Sarah, I'm going to bring you into the conversation then. You've got one night. It's going to be at your studio. How do you prepare?
Oh, I'm so excited. I am choosing the pieces that I really want people to see. I have a wonderful studio on School Street. I'm cleaning it out in preparation for spending a year in Japan, so the studio will be empty of all my tools and materials. And I'm working with Kat to figure out what pieces should be in it, but I have a lot of room, and it's also going to be a gathering. It's like a pop-up show. It's also like an art opening, and this will be a traditional art opening. So hopefully lots of friends and lots of new faces will be there. I'm really basically, I'm just cleaning up. the short answer, getting things neat and orderly.
It's the title of the show is Black Hearts?
Yes.
You say that somewhat quietly.
Well, I have a lot of black heart paintings. I'm not sure. I don't think they're going to be the main focus of the show now. I might have called it something else. But I like to paint hearts, so there'll be several black hearts. So.
How did you select the people that would be involved in the pop-up shows?
Well, so far I selected Sarah because, first off, her studio was excellent location. It looked great. She already has a body of work that she's almost complete with. I mean, you're about to go to Japan, right? So
yeah.
She was kind of finishing up, I think, a whole body of work. And so it just came together easily. I'm doing a group show at the Ann Cottrell Gallery, and I was trying to think of a kind of Arkansas roots people that kind of have dispersed and went to other states for that show. So curating that show, that's my mindset. And then the next show is actually at Sarah's Gallery again, and the way that was chosen is I have to do my MFA candidacy to proceed in the program, and so does another girl named Nicole. So we asked Sarah if we could use her space, and she was kind enough to allow us to have our pop-up there.
Sarah, you mentioned that it's not just black hearts. What else, if you could give someone listening a preview, what else might?
Well, all my work is basically rectilinear and hangs on the wall, but I call it sculpture and not painting. I use panels, different kinds of panels. The black hearts are on OSB board that's been highly finished.
I'm sorry, I don't know what OSB board is.
Oh, that's that stuff you put under the floor. Ah. It's also called particle board.
Oh, okay.
Lately, the particle board is really heavy. It's wood chips glued in a matrix, and I decided to work on styrofoam panels, which are really light, and I've been using paints. They're more colorful. But basically, it all hangs on the wall and is pretty flat. And maybe I use a lot of decorative objects.
Some found objects.
Yes, and, yeah. Found objects, but I use them pretty simply and minimally. I think that there are definitely two different kinds of work. One tends to be dark and depressing, and one lately tends to be very bright and cheerful. So hopefully I can arrange it. So
I was
going to
say, are they
going to
be fully integrated?
That's a hard thing on the website and talking to people about it. But luckily the space is very big and very well suited to having it's got great walls. And so I think that I think it'll be an interesting show. I think people will. I like to make things that if I saw them, I would like them, and I'd be happy that I'd seen them. That's sort of my is this finished? Is this a piece I want to claim and put in my portfolio? If I saw it and I liked it and was either delighted or moved by it, so hopefully at least some people there will have the same
reaction. I want to see what you think about my interpretation of your art.
I'd love to hear what.
You might just punch me in the face.
I was going to ask, because there is a sort of act of bravery or courage putting something you've put your heart and soul into on a wall and said, okay, people, tell me what you think.
Well, yeah. So what do you think, Kat?
Well, I just think, when people ask me about it, I always say smart kitsch.
Well, I use a lot of homely decorative objects that people call kitsch. But one thing is I feel like I use it. I try to find objects to mount on these panels that seem to have some kind of magic for me or that move me in some way. And I think kitsch, they may have been used by the original owners is sort of a stereotyped or uninteresting decoration, but I try to take them from that context, recontextualize them, and create, because sometimes I see like a little figurine or a, you know, some kind of banal object, and for some reason it just really moves me and it seems very magical to me. And those are the pieces I work with. But I like that. Smart kitsch. I like the smart part.
July 28th, there will be music.
Yes. My son is David Slade, formerly of the American Princes and now of the band Magic Hassle. And he's coming up to play for the show.
Is that Magic Hassle?
Magic, Hassle.
I like that. Magic Hassle. Yeah. I like that. We mentioned that it's at your studio on School Street. We should give the address.
Yeah. It's 2650 School Street. I think it starts at 7. There's lots of room, plenty of parking. I think we're going to serve refreshments. So I hope people who hear this who think it might be a fun thing to do on a Saturday night will plan to come.
And Kat, you'll be in this space where your MFA show will be in a month after that, right?
Yeah, just about, yeah.
Are you going to be kind of eyeballing and thinking, oh.
I've already done it. The pressure's on for me.
Yeah.
And so you'll be co-director through the summer.
Correct.
Of Sugar. And then your term is?
Yeah, then done. I served last year in Bentonville in the summer, and then Cambry Newton and Samantha Dixon are going to take over next year. And they've got a lot of programming in store for everyone. A lot of stuff that will be on the square, like I said, the area businesses and community spaces.
Watch out. You may be in the middle of a pop-up show.
That's right.
Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
It's Tuesday, the 10th of July, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
With us is Becca Martin Brown. She is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
More fun things to do if you're a kid. Expert hour at the Rogers Public Library today is at 2 o'clock, and the craft is melted crayon art. Some, I guess they'll go out and do it on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty warm, so.
Fleur Delicious weekend continues. It started one weekend. It goes through another.
That's
anyway,
a good weekend.
Yeah, it's
That's a good weekend.
It continues tonight with Uniquely Edible Arkansas with Kat Robinson of Tie-Dye Travels and Margie Rollins of Raimondo Family Winery, 5 to 7 o'clock at 515 Spring Street in Eureka Springs. Find out more at FleurDeliciousWeekend.com.
Mm-hmm.
Free Flicks Before 6 at the Fayetteville Public Library, which starts at 5:30, hence the name, is Joyful Noise. It's free for families.
Dolly Parton is in that.
Oh.
And Queen Latifah.
Right.
Yes.
Right, right. There's a art reception tonight from 6 to 8 at the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale. It's a show called A Place Called Home, and it's art by Megan Chapman and Stuart Bremner.
Mm.
The exhibit continues through July 27th. There's a book signing tonight at Barnes & Noble Booksellers in Fayetteville with Rashonda Tate Billingsley. She's the author of The Secret She Kept. Mm-hmm. Did I say that starts at 7 o'clock? An opera in the Ozarks at 7:30 tonight at Inspiration Point Fine Arts Colony near Eureka Springs is The Magic Flute. Tickets start at $20.
Melted crayons, books, and opera.
What more could you want?
I don't know.
I love Northwest Arkansas.
Thank you, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Cassandra Bonner spent a year on unemployment, and like millions of others, when a job offer finally came, she took it.
It's about half of what I was making before, but it's more than what I'd been making when I was unemployed, so we're fine.
I'm Neil Conan. The new economic reality for too many, the downwardly mobile. Next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon at 1, following Ozarks at Large here on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Lifestyles Car Wash and Detail Center, a part of the Lifestyles Employment Program, provides jobs, training, and support to adults with disabilities within our community. The car wash will hold a grand reopening July 12th through the 14th at 3010 West Walnut and Rogers. Activities, giveaways, and more will be offered. Information is available at lifestylesinc.org or 717-2608.
I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Hey, boy. Hey, boy. Hey, what you doing, man? Cut it. Hey, what you gonna do? That ain't the piece we supposed to play. Come on. Well, I guess I better get on in here with it.
In January 1945, Brinkley-born R&B trendsetter Louis Jordan recorded what would be one of his most enduring hits, Caledonia Boogie. The song set America on its ear. It spawned endless cover versions, two of which were released before Jordan's original was issued. Caledonia was also the name of a popular film starring Louis Jordan, from which this version of Caledonia comes. The short movie was a big success. In 1946, Billboard magazine reported Caledonia has been one of the very few all-Negro productions to get bookings in Southern white theaters. Jordan would go on to star in several all-Negro productions, as well as cameo in other Hollywood films during his pioneering decade of the 1940s. Jordan's wife at the time, Fleecy Moore of Brassfield in Prairie County, is actually given credit for writing Caledonia Boogie. Moore was given credit for writing several of Louis' biggest hits. Jordan was signed to another publishing company, and doing this practice allowed him to negotiate other deals without worrying about clauses in existing publishing contracts. Jordan would later regret the practice when the couple divorced acrimoniously after she stabbed him in January 1947. Jordan had first performed Caledonia Boogie in 1944 for an Armed Forces Jubilee program, but the first version of Caledonia to be released was a revved-up Caledonia by Woody Herman and his Thundering Herd, issued shortly after the band had recorded it for Columbia Records in late February 1945. The song stayed with Woody Herman throughout his career. In fact, Herman did this blistering 12-minute version of the song as the finale of his 40th anniversary concert at Carnegie Hall in November 1976.
One, two, one, two, three, and...
Woody Herman's version of Caledonia Boogie hit the pop charts on May 5, 1945. Erskine Hawkins followed with a version for RCA Victor, which hit the charts on May 12th. Louis Jordan's Decca Records finally got the message and released Jordan's version of Caledonia, which entered the charts in June. On the pop charts, Herman made it to number 2, Hawkins to number 12, and Jordan to number 6. On the Race Records chart, Hawkins reached number 2. Jordan's original version hit number 1 and stayed on the charts for 6 months in 1945. With Quincy Jones at the helm, Louis Jordan recut Caledonia and other of his classic hits in 1956 for Mercury Records. The session's purpose was to try and introduce Jordan's music to the burgeoning rock and roll generation. But despite influencing Chuck Berry and Bill Haley, and the Caledonia shriek sounding just like Little Richard, the rock generation was unmoved. Mercury billed Jordan as the original rock and roller, and the shuffle rhythms Jordan had made famous the previous decade were replaced by faster tempos and an emphasis on guitar over sax. Many have claimed Caledonia. Blues woman Sippy Wallace said the song was based on her song Caledonia Blues from the early 1920s, while Louis Jordan acknowledged the line Caledonia, what makes your big head so hard, was lifted from a Hot Lips Page record. A lawsuit over ownership of the song went to the Supreme Court, but the song remained Louis Jordan's, or Fleecy Moore's rather. Roy Clark, B.B. King, Benny Goodman, Memphis Slim, Carl Perkins, Louis Prima, Dale Hawkins, and Clifton Chenier are among the hundreds who have covered this song. This 1975 version features Levon Helm of Phillips County on drums and was produced by Henry Glover of Hot Springs. It helped legendary blues man Muddy Waters win a Grammy.
Walking up, baby, she got great big feet. She long, lean, lanky, and had nothing to eat. She's my baby. I love her just the same.
15 months before his death, Louis Jordan recut Caledonia again in France in 1973. This version showcased Jordan's cabaret act and uncanny ability to connect with audiences. It also saw once long, lean, and lanky Caledonia ballooning to more than 300 pounds.
She said, son, you got to put the woman down. She eats too much, she too fat, she drinks too much, she don't fix your meals on time, and you should drop her.
Caledonia Boogie, only one remarkable song of Louis Jordan's remarkable and influential canon. Here in its entirety is the original version of Brinkley native Louis Jordan's Caledonia Boogie, recorded in January 1945.
But she's my baby, and I love her just the same. Crazy about that woman, cause Caledonia is her name. Caledonia! Caledonia! I want to make your big head so hot, Ma. I love you just the same. I'll always love you, baby, cause Caledonia is your name. She said, son, keep away from that woman. She ain't no good. Don't bother her. But Mama didn't know what Caledonia was putting down. So I'm going down to Caledonia's house and ask her just one more time.
Caldonia! Caldonia! What make your big head so hard?
It's another song of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook for Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. It's hard to imagine you have completely escaped this song.
But now you're in my way. Your stare was holding, red jeans, skin was showing, hot night wind was blowing. Where you think you're going, baby? Hey, I just met you.
That's Call Me Maybe is recorded by Carly Rae Jepsen. The song reached the top of the charts in the United States, Canada, and at least 13 other countries, from Venezuela to New Zealand. A version by the Harvard baseball team is a viral hit, and a version of the song using splices from speeches made by President Obama has been watched more than 18 million times on YouTube. It seems almost every summer has one of those songs. It can be heard almost everywhere. It resonates with a wide swath of listeners, while no doubt annoying others. Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for Fayetteville Flyer and joins me to discuss the phenomenon of the summer song. And we're deep in summer, Wayne. Easy to say that will be remembered, I think, as the song of summer 2012. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I think that will be. It'll be interesting, though, like in 4 or 5 years, if we'll remember it or if it'll just kind of go away.
But do we care if it's every year those summer songs are the ones that kind of catch the summer zeitgeist and then perhaps they are forgotten?
Yeah. Last summer, LMFAO did it with that party rock anthem or whatever.
Right.
I will say, I guess Call Me Maybe is less annoying than that. But there are some summer songs or songs that make you think about summer that stand up, I mean, over time, and, you know, those are rare, but when they come, they're really great. I mean, what do you think qualifies a summer to be a summer song?
Well, I think it probably depends on your age. I think warm weather months, and it's popular when school's not in session.
Or it, you know, it quintessentially just makes you think summer. I mean, like the Beach Boys or something.
But for me, they didn't have any hits in any summer that I can recollect. I mean, I was too young.
And yet everybody probably thinks of them as a summer band. Same thing
That's a different designation in my mind.
Jimmy Buffett.
Right.
Or even Dave Matthews. Like these touring summer bands.
But none of, I mean, excluding the Beach Boys, perhaps, because they did have hits, big hits. You know, Dave Matthews' band resonated with a certain crowd, and Jimmy Buffett certainly has a pair of heads, but I don't recall a time when you could not get away from
them. You're right.
Right.
Right. I mean, when I think of classic summer songs of the past, you know, 10 years or whatever, a couple come to mind. I think of Rihanna's Umbrella. One of those things where it doesn't really matter what your music tastes.
Exactly.
I mean, you could be somebody who didn't listen to the radio and you heard it.
And hummed along, probably.
Right. Beyonce's Crazy in Love, I think, is my favorite summer song. Crazy, Gnarls Barkley.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space.
Don't you think a summer song has to be upbeat?
Right.
And a little bit frivolous or a little bit...
Yeah, like Lady Gaga has had some big summer songs. Or it can be people who tour in the summer and get a lot of press for it. And so they have a big song come out. You know, I think back to the 90s with like U2 when they were doing Zoo TV and stuff. And they were getting a lot of press out. In the summer, but you know, the 90s gave us great stuff from In Vogue and, you know, some R&B songs and great pop songs. The Friends theme song, I remember the summer that came out.
Yes.
And it was everywhere.
Yes. Well, I remember the summer between high school and my first year of college, which would have been the summer of 1981. You could not walk down a street, and if someone had their windows open, and not hear Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. everyone listen to it. And I think that's the thing about a summer song, is that it's you're as likely to hear it coming from someone's car as you are at the snow cone stand,
right,
or at the beach, or it's something your mother might be listening to or tapping her feet to. It's just this sort of shared experience. And I wonder if it's harder and harder to have that. Because so many radio stations used to play, you would hear Summer Wind by Frank Sinatra, and within 10 minutes you might hear Wild Thing by Troggs.
Cause right.
It was just, and that just wouldn't happen now.
Well, I remember in 04, that summer, I went to Europe, and it didn't matter where I went. I was at in Rome, in Paris, and everywhere that we went, it was a communication department trip for the university, and we couldn't get away from that Usher song, Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was everywhere. We would walk into stores in Rome, and it was playing. Many people didn't even know what, you know, he was saying, but they were singing along, and it was like, wow, this is really taking over. And those do come along. Something comes along, like a Call Me Maybe, and you didn't see that one coming.
Well, I don't think you see them coming. And I think if someone said, okay, I'm going to write the song that's going to be for the summer of blank, I don't think you could succeed. Because many of the ones we've named don't seem calculated. They just kind of hit for whatever reason, capture lightning in a bottle. And I think it's interesting that with the exception of people like Beach Boys or Jimmy Buffett, who are categorized in that, people who've actually had big summer hits, not many people have had more than one or two of these kinds of songs. But don't you think summer's better if you have a summer song?
Sure. I think every summer has them, and I think it's hard for me to even remember a few years ago what it was, unless you have the Crazy in Love or the Crazy or those songs that just stick.
And that's okay if they don't.
Right.
But you have that, what's that called, the milestone effect when you hear a song, and it instantly takes you back to summer.
Right.
And that may be a more personal choice.
And that may be more personal, but it's like, you know, just like that snow cone, it doesn't last very long in the heat. Sometimes they do, but most of the time it goes right away.
Wayne Bell writes the column Culture Club for FayettevilleFlyer.com. Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
She was checking up for me. From the game she was spitting in my ear, you would think that she knew me. Decided to cheat.
Okay.
Conversation got heavy. Hey. She had me feeling like she's ready to bloom.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 10th of July, 2012. It was 50 years ago today, 1962, the world's first commercial communications satellite was launched, Telstar 1, about 3 feet in diameter, with an array of square solar panels over the surface. It's the birthday of Marcel Proust, born in Auteuil, France, in 1871. His major work, the 7-volume Remembrance of Things Past, known now as In Search of Lost Time. Proust's own life story, with the famous scene early on in the book when the narrator dips a bit of a madeleine, little cake, in some tea, and it carries the memory of his childhood. Proust wrote, "No sooner had the warm liquid mixed with the crumbs touched my palate than a shudder ran through me and I stopped, intent upon the extraordinary thing that was happening to me. An exquisite pleasure had invaded my senses, something isolated, detached, with no suggestion of its origin. It had on me the effect which love has of filling me with a precious essence. I had ceased now to feel mediocre, contingent, mortal. Whence could it have come to me, this all-powerful joy? And suddenly the memory revealed itself. The taste was that of the little piece of madeleine, which on Sunday mornings at Cambrai, when I went to say good morning to her in her bedroom, my Aunt Leonie used to give me, dipping it first in her own cup of tea. the sight of the little Madeleine had recalled nothing to my mind before I tasted it, and all from my cup of tea. Which all really happened to Proust, although in his case it was a humbler food than a Madeleine. It was a piece of rusk, toast. He began the novel in June 1909, produced the first volume, Swan's Way, in 1913, spent the next decade working on the rest, and he was proofreading the final three unfinished volumes on his deathbed in 1922. It's the birthday of John Calvin, born in Picardy, France, 1509, who experienced a religious epiphany sometime in his early 20s. He embraced Protestantism when that was a dangerous thing to do in France, and he took to the road through France and Italy and Switzerland, finally settling in Geneva. And in 1536, he published his Institutes of the Christian Religion, laying out the foundations that we've come to know as Calvinism. Total depravity, all people born sinful, unconditional election, that God has chosen those people who will be saved, limited atonement, irresistible grace, if you are among the elect, you will inevitably repent and become a Christian, and perseverance of the saints, you can never lose your salvation. The five principles which spell out the word tulip. Here's a poem for today by Tennessee Williams, Covenant. If you are happy, I will give you an apple. If you are anxious, I will twist your arm. And if you permit me, I will be glad to hold you close to my heart forever and do you no harm. If I am happy, will you give me an apple? If I am anxious, you may twist my arm. And if you would like to, I would like you to hold me close to your heart forever and do me no harm. This is a bargain. Only two can make it. This is a covenant offered with desperate calm, it being uncertain that lovers can drive out demons with the gift of an apple or the twist of an arm. Covenant, a poem by Tennessee Williams from the collected poems of Tennessee Williams, published by New Directions, used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, offering online review, monitoring, and management services for businesses that know the importance of online reviews. Learn more at Reputation.com. Produced by Nick Vetter, written by Holly Vanderhaar. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Sugar Grove.
Where is Sugar Grove?
It's southeast of Boonville.
Okay. I've never been to Sugar Grove.
Me neither.
Until a few seconds ago, I never heard of Sugar Grove,
Arkansas.
Well,
there you go. There's your one thing that you had to learn for the day.
Well, that's good. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is, by the way, as you heard Garrison Keillor mention just a few minutes ago, the 50th anniversary of the launching of the Telstar satellite, which allowed for the first time ever transatlantic images to be broadcast. So... The satellite was launched. It weighed 171 pounds. It was launched 50 years ago today. It was a combination of effort by AT&T, Bell Labs, NASA, and agencies from Great Britain and France. The first images that were made available to the public, live images, mm-hmm. were not until July 23rd.
So what were the first ones then?
I'm glad you asked. Oh. The first images to be sent across the world transatlantically on a satellite were of the Statue of Liberty and the Eiffel Tower, and then a baseball game between the Phillies and the Cubs. Mm-hmm. Originally, the first words on Telstar were supposed to be an address from President Kennedy, but okay. he wasn't quite ready. You only had 20 minutes every 3 hours that you could use this satellite.
Why is that?
Just the way the technology was. This was brand new. It wasn't like today when you could just roll up a truck.
Yeah.
But the president wasn't quite ready, so he didn't do that, and they went to the baseball game in Chicago.
Well, there you go.
So happy 50th anniversary, Telstar.
Sure. Why not?
Yes. Recently, you went to a live performance, a free live performance from Arts Live Theater.
I did. A couple of weeks ago, I think week and a half, I went to Peggy the Pint-Sized Pirate. I'd never been to an Art Slave show, which I realized I've covered them for a couple of years now, but I've never actually been to a show. So when Mark was like, yeah, we're having this.
Mark Landon Smith.
Mark Landon Smith, the
artistic director.
Yes. He told me that they were having a free show for a couple of days there. And what it was sort of part of a class that the kids were taking, or probably part of their summer camp series things that they have. And they would meet for a couple of weeks, and only like an hour and a half, I think, is what he said. And so I think they had less – when he added it all together, I think he was like less than 20 hours of rehearsal time to put this show together. And it was like a 30 to 40-minute show. And I think there was about a dozen actors.
All young people, right?
All young people, of course. Arts Life Theaters for kids. So, yeah, it was cute, and I was excited that I got to go and hang out there for a little bit.
So we're going to hear a bit of a montage from that.
We are.
You can learn more about Arts Life Theater at their website.
Sure, artslifetheater.com. In between the scenes, while they were changing stuff around, or kids were changing costumes, because, you know, there were not a lot of them, they would have, like, these little commercials.
And written by the actors themselves.
Which I did not know. You told me that later, because I asked Mark about this, and the show itself was not his. He found it on the internet. So
for free. It's in the public domain. Well, here are some of the sounds from young actors at Arts Live Theater. Brand new show tomorrow at noon.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for being here for Peggy the Pint-Sized Pirate. My name is Mark Smith. I'm Executive Director here at Arts Live. And what you're seeing today is the result of our Summer Theater Conservatory. We're so glad you guys are here. Check us out at artslivetheater.com. Enjoy Peggy the Pint-Sized Pirate.
Hi, I'm Peggy. Peggy the... Well, actually, I don't have a true pirate name yet.
So you do. It's Peggy the Pint-Sized Pirate.
Yes, that's what they call me. Peggy the Pint-Sized Pirate. But I'm tired of it. I won't stand for it anymore.
Stand for it? I thought you were sitting down. Get sail for Tucson.
Captain, I see something coming.
Da-dum.
Did you see it?
No. Da-dum.
There!
Whale-ho! Da-dum.
That's no whale.
It's a
sea monster! So I set sail, trying to find our missing pirate friends. I knew that if I could save them, I would prove I was worthy of being a good pirate.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors.
Are you a pirate with clean, straight teeth? Getting made fun of? Pearly White Willy or Straight Tooth Tommy? Change all that with Crest Tooth Decay. Just apply the grime, pinch your nose, and kabam! Your teeth are bound to get rotten. Nothing will put the grime in your teeth like Crest.
And now back to our show.
I want you to release all the pirates you captured.
Why?
Because, well, what did they do to you?
They have made a garbage dump of the sea.
You're mad at them because they litter?
Three cheers for Peggy.
Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray! Hip hip hooray!
Thank you, all of you. But this means no more litter.
Come on, you scurvy dogs.
I see my work is cut out for me.
Is that litter I see? Oh, pirates!
Here we go again.